There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast. On the left.
From your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
No.
Yeah, the first one is good, though. I stand by the first one.
I mean, it's a total ripoff of The Invisibles, but...
Everything's a ripoff of something.
Shakespeare stole from the Romans. But who did the Romans steal from?
They stole Jesus' life.
Jesus.
Mary.
Jesus Christ. And then who was there for Jesus?
Hey, guys, it's been funny and all and stuff, but, like, we don't have to actually nail me to this thing. Guys, hey, guys. You guys are being really funny, all right? But stop it with the spear, okay?
Oh, my goodness. Right. Welcome to the last podcast.
Okay there, buddy.
Welcome to the last podcast. On the left, everyone, I am Ben Kissel. I'm staring at Marcus Parks.
Staring intently.
Your teeth are looking great, Marcus.
Thank you very much. The Invisalign is working slowly but surely.
I actually see the change. I really do.
It's weird, right?
Yep. And then, of course, we got Henry Zebrowski over there.
You sound like a man who just has been staring at trees during September.
Oh, being like, man. I see it. I wish.
I see it.
Yeah.
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 Is it yellow?
Yeah.
Foliage expert Ben Kissel. It's called being an outside drunk.
Yeah. I can't wait until my 50s, if I make it. Or maybe that's more of a 60s thing. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah. Well, it depends on how fast you give up.
That's true. All right. Well, we're on to Norwegian Black Metal Part 3. And the church burnings, they're happening. They happened. And now we're on to Murder. Murder indeed.
Now, when we last left the black metal scene, the competition of evil had already begun, with church burnings happening across the country, and it was only a matter of time before that quest for evil would lead to murder.
Ooh.
And finally, the quest for evil has arrived here in my bathroom. As you can see, what I've done is I've taken the caps off of all the toothpaste.
Ooh.
Now the dried exterior of the toothpaste will not allow the luscious liquid toothpaste ever to hit the brush of my roommates.
Oh my goodness. I remember when MTV's Real World had real problems like that.
Yeah.
Remember that?
And lead to murder it did!
Whoa!
In August of 1992, when Bernd Eithon, a.k.a. Faust, stabbed a stranger to death in Lillehammer, Norway.
Ooh. Now, Baird or Bard or Bjord or I don't know or how half these names are pronounced. His name is Faust, which is a cool name because
yeah.
An evil doctor made a deal with the devil. It's fucking super metal. But Bard himself was maybe 75 pounds soaking wet. And he had that thing that I cannot stand. It's a hipster thing now, too, with the wispy... like armpit hair hanging out of really thin arms while wearing a tank top. It really just makes me sick to my stomach.
Why? Because they have nice bodies with good, luscious armpit hair?
No, he looks like Ichabod Crane, and he's got that, like, sickly, like, I'm living in a shanty town in Central Africa body, and it's just the scarecrow fingers. That's what I'm even called, scarecrow fingers of
for
fucking
nipples.
Armpit hair.
Oh, yeah. for armpit hair. I'm jealous of that. I am jealous of that body, though.
Oh, that's my body.
But not, well, but yeah. Yes, it is.
Now, Faust, as I suppose we'll call him, as we can't really pronounce these Norwegian names, was a drummer for the extremely influential black metal band Emperor, signed at the time to Euronymous' Deathlike Silence Productions, as well as being a part of the so-called Norwegian Black Circle.
So he's on the way up. He's doing very well in the community.
He's doing well in the community, and a couple of the other guys from Emperor were very active in the church burnings.
Okay.
Now, Faust also published a fanzine dedicated to black metal called Orcrustus, which somehow translates to
the inner circle of hell where Lucifer resides on his throne. So it's Lucifer's bathroom.
Oh, I see. Yeah, Orcrustus just sounds like a horrible pizza place. It's all vegan, no cheese at all. It's like you can have Orcrustus, Orcrustus. That's all we have is Crustus.
Like, it sounds like the thing, like, after sex, when you pee and it just comes out in the two separate streams.
Oh, yes.
So, in August of 1992, Faust was in Lillehammer visiting his mother for the weekend.
Excuse me, everybody. I know you will miss me. I'm sorry I'm missing rehearsals and visiting my mother. But I will make sure that it is the most evil trip to see my mother that has ever been.
the most black metal visit ever.
I don't know about you, Sven, but Faust is getting cooler and cooler.
So Faust was out having a drink, but he left the bar stone sober because, in his words, quote,
"The atmosphere didn't suit me."
Oh, so you can't have a drink because the atmosphere didn't suit him?
No, the atmosphere did not suit him, so he had to go home.
You got to have a drink to suit the atmosphere.
You left your mother's house to go get a drink. Like, I don't understand. Like, you left the bad part to go to the good part. So what is it? The atmosphere just didn't have enough rotting corpses?
I guess so.
Well, after leaving the bar, Faust decided to walk through a park that had been constructed for the upcoming 1994 Winter Olympics.
Oh.
Oksana Bayul.
Yes, I remember.
Oh, yeah, the sexual awakening of many of us.
Well, this was this the Kerrigan Olympics?
Actually, it was the Kerrigan Olympics, yeah. 1994. Well, in that park, a man named Magna Andresen approached Faust asking for a light, even though Magna was already smoking.
Oh.
Got a light? Got a light? Got a light?
A Budweiser frog outside the bar.
Now, it was obvious that Magna was cruising for a little action.
Oh.
But instead of politely declining and moving on, Faust decided then and there, spur of the moment, that he was going to kill this man.
Oh, my.
Well, Magna asked Faust if he wanted to leave the park and go up into the woods together. They walked together into the forest for a while until Faust decided the time was right.
I love that this guy's courting habits were the same as Chikatilo's. I'll ask him to go to the woods with me. Nothing could go wrong.
Or Faust later said,
"I don't really remember what I was thinking, but at least I knew if I didn't do it now, I would not get another opportunity."
The way that you do it, I feel like you should be throwing spaghetti in the air. Just very chef-like.
So as Magna was walking behind Faust and talking, Faust pulled out the folding knife he always kept in his back pocket, turned around, and stabbed Magna in the stomach. Magna fell to his knees, and Faust continued stabbing him in the neck and face.
Mm.
And when Magna finally fell to the ground, Faust continued stabbing him in the back, sticking the knife so hard between Magna's shoulder blades that Faust had to brace his foot against the body to get it out again. And after pulling out the knife, Faust started to walk away, but heard Magna making noises like he was still alive. Mm. Faust walked back and kicked Magna's head in, later saying,
"I didn't want him to manage to live through this and go to the hospital and report me. It was easier to take his life and then go and hope that everything would be okay."
Man. Meanwhile, there's a Michelob and a really nice TGI Fridays with his name on it. And he could have just sat at a damn bar and had a drink. Instead, he killed a poor man.
He could have been wined and dined.
Yeah.
He is 20 years old. Faust has nothing. Faust is a garbage person.
Yeah.
He met an upwardly mobile gentleman that just so happened to want to have a tussle in the bushes.
Right.
Which I think is a thing. People find that romantic.
Sure.
I don't, only because I hate leaves.
Well, they stick to your body, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not into that. So it's like,
I find it romantic.
Do you?
Yes.
So you guys,
well, you can listen to Sex and Other Human Activities on Last Podcast Network for more insight into the romantic leanings of Marcus Parks.
Do you guys leave your apartment to go out into the streets of Greenpoint to have sex?
No, you don't do it in
the
street.
Not in the city, I don't think he's referencing. No, there's no romance there.
No, there's no romance there. And not really in Prospect Park either because, you know, there's kids there. And you can't go to Central Park to the Brambles because that's where the cruising happens.
You've thought about it.
The homeless gay men already have that all staked out, so we can't use that.
Do the Brambles have, like, a no-breeder sign?
Well, it's understood.
Like, can you not?
It's understood.
It's an understanding.
Yeah, that's something in New York City you understand. Have you ever walked through the Brambles before?
I don't know what a bramble is. I know there's a drink called a bramble.
Yeah, Brambles is a part of Central Park where lots of gay sex happens.
Okay, well, we gotta have a little fun.
Yeah.
You gotta leave a lot of clearance for your feet. You gotta really lift your knees when you're walking through there because you don't, like, you just wanna make sure you don't accidentally step on a honeymoon.
Well, all in all, Faust stabbed his victim 37 times.
Oof.
And the body was found 2 days later by a schoolgirl jogging in the area.
I just see, like, that's my problem though, is that in these areas I just imagine like a very well set woman in a lederhosen dress
with a beer
with
stein on her head
and pigtails.
I mean, you know, it's the old cliche, why jog?
You're
just gonna find a body. But has a person skipping ever found a body? Have a little more fun with it.
Well, the day after the murder, Faust returned to Oslo, where he joined Varg and possibly Euronymous, depending on who you talk to, and burned down Holmenkollen Church.
This guy is having a busy 48 hours for a black metal star.
Yeah, man.
Technically, it's called a black metal bat mitzvah, is what he just did.
I said it
was true. He hit it all at once, because what he said was that he went to go hang out, immediately started bragging about what he did.
Smart.
And then the two of them said, do you want to come on this church burning with us? And he just straight up said, was like, well, I've already killed someone. I might as well burn a church.
Horrible people.
And the night after the church burning, Faust was watching TV when he found that he was directly responsible for both the lead and the follow-up stories on the national news, which nobody had linked at the time.
But they didn't realize it was him. The stories were just out there.
They had no idea. They knew that the church burnings were it was a black metal thing.
Mm-hmm.
But with Magna and Drayson, that was just a complete and total unsolved murder.
Okay.
And when Faust was asked if Magna being gay had anything to do with the murder, Faust said,
I don't like it when you're trying to get people who aren't homosexual. It's okay if they want to be homosexuals, but at least they must stay with their own people.
This guy is dressed like Avril Lavigne on a bad day.
Yes.
After being buried in the ground for 3 days, and he has the audacity to judge others. It's really incredible how judgmental they are.
Extreme. I mean, their whole thing is based on being judgmental. Because these guys are very biblical.
But I thought
like,
they were supposed to be Old Testament
biblical.
Yeah.
No, it's the opposite. They are hardcore us versus them. It's the same thing as like it's the bad side of any what becomes sort of like a cult-like mentality, is that they believe it's us versus them. And they sit there also, kind of sounds like if he didn't kill him, that they might have fallen in love with each other.
Yeah, that's a bit of that in there as well.
Well, that's what Faust is. He's one of those homophobes that as long as gays are on the other side of the room, he can keep that hatred and homophobia at bay. But as soon as a gay person talks to him, he starts feeling all weird inside. He freaks out and it comes out in extreme violence.
In
other words, he's one of those guys with the feelings that are strongest.
Yes, exactly.
Now, the night of the murder, Faust immediately called Euronymous to tell him all about the murder, and Euronymous told Varg, and Varg used it as currency to show how cool and evil the scene was when he was talking to girls.
It's like that sleepover game that used to be advertised when we were a kid, where it's like you call the girls up on the telephone, and they're all like, what? Say it again. Brad did what? And they're curling the telephone cord on their finger back and forth, just kicking their feet up, eating marshmallows in bed.
Man, it's a 90s flashback week for me. I watched Goosebumps yesterday as well.
Oh, how was that?
It's horrifying. It's great stuff.
Is it just you with your suit jacket on and no clothes underneath that just is drinking a tall
no
boy?
No clothes
just
at all, my
Goosebumps?
Friend. No clothes at all at home for me.
Well, not only did this murder and the subsequent church burning give the scene a bit of social currency, it also gave the scene more confidence in their actions.
Oh, my
gosh. As not only had they gotten away with dozens of arsons, including one that had resulted in the accidental death of a firefighter, but one of them had now gotten away with murder and topped it off with another church burning, all consequence-free.
Oh, up to this point,
up
I would assume some consequences must be coming, correct?
But just like the Doomsday Machine and Dr. Strangelove, there's no point to any of this if you keep it a secret. So Varg gave an anonymous interview to the Bergens Tidende newspaper.
The what was that?
Bergens Tidende.
The Bergens Tidende?
Bergens Tidende.
Are you sure this isn't a trucker magazine? What's going on?
I don't know how that's pronounced.
No idea.
I think Bergens Tidende. It's a newspaper, in any case.
It's a newspaper.
It's a newspaper. He gave the interview in January of 1993, and this is the interview that Varg refers to as the media event.
Go fuck yourself, honestly. It's this whole thing where he says he did this on purpose and this is carefully constructed. And it may actually be.
I think it kind of is.
But it's the way that the media was manipulated just so easily. It's because the story was just handed to them.
Yes, exactly.
And so they just ran with it.
Yeah. It's such a perfect media story.
It's a great media, especially in the 90s. Like, you know, you've got the whole satanic panic thing going on in America, and then all of a sudden Norway has their very own satanic panic. They have their very own huge crime story to cover, and people ate it up. They could not get enough of it.
Innocent times, man. Simpler days, fun days, man.
Yeah. You got religion, you got church burnings, you got murder, you got it all.
Yeah,
music.
Glory days!
Is that what that song's about?
Yes.
Now, Varg, who it must be remembered, still went by Count Grishnak in casual conversation.
Casual conversation. Casual, yeah.
Hello, Count. Oh, this is my friend Count Grishnak. Hello, Grishnak. It's very nice to meet you.
Oh,
Count
my God.
Grishnak.
We think the pronouns are difficult now. Imagine if everyone was going by Count whenever they wanted to.
I did not go to 12 years of fake royalty school to be called Grishnak.
I'm sorry. I didn't. I apologize, Count.
I put myself through several yearly exams.
I know.
I wrote a thesis. I went on summer vacation where I met a girl while working at an ice cream van. I did that. I was still, yes, and that was then loosely based on the movie Once Bitten was loosely based on my story then. Well, but when I graduated, I stopped being Grishnak.
All right, your account. Can you just pay for this coffee and get out of this gas station, please?
I have no money.
Oh, you just take the coffee.
Well, this was an anonymous interview that he did, but he openly said he knew who had burned the churches, saying that they were, quote,
showing Othin to the people.
Ugh, Othin. Odin.
Ah, yes.
Othin. It's Othin.
I see. Okay.
There are 20 different pronunciations for Odin.
Woden. And guess what? And each one of them, it's like Sub-Zero Othin. It is like Desert Othin. It's a Pterodactyl Othin. It's Half-Bus Transformer Othin.
That's cool. I like Woden.
Yeah, oh, I like
that's my favorite one.
That, well, of course, that's the German way of saying it.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Look at that. Right on brand. Woden is also a really great cum sentence.
Woden! Woden! Or if you want to freeze your enemy.
Except it's pronounced Woden.
Oh.
Yeah, but in the German way, Woden. But that's some of that cultural memory we were talking about in the last episode, the Carl Jung cultural memory. You have that, Ben. You were immediately drawn to that.
This is true. Right. We've never talked about this. Kissel has the power of the runes deep within his blood. Kissel is born with Vril at his fingertips.
I'm going to start summoning it. You guys better watch out.
Yeah, you're the only one, man. Yeah, I've only got like English and French energy.
Ooh.
A little bit of Native American.
Voting.
Well, Varg was also quoted as saying that one of the churches that was burned on Christmas Eve was burned not because of the date, but because the black meddlers had heard the word peaceful said on TV, and they got all mad about the quote-unquote righteousness in society.
Oh, God.
So this is when Varg becomes the Penguin.
They are a D-bags.
Well, Varg says that a lot of the things printed in this article, and for that matter, many of the things printed in Lords of Chaos, are complete and total lies.
Mm.
And there are probably some exaggerations here and there.
Oh, I'm sure.
But the thing is, a lot of the things Varg said in the interview were confirmed, so it's hard to say what's true and what's not.
Yeah.
Now, they may not have burned the church because someone said the word peaceful, but this was the interview in which he mentioned the bunny chase that we talked about in the last episode. And a decapitated bunny was indeed found at Fantoft Church. Mm.
But later, the autopsies would reveal that it was a suicide.
Of the bunny? Oh, yes. we gotta increase the bunny's lifestyle.
Yes.
Plus, some of the quotes do sound a hell of a lot like the self-serious bullshit Varg likes to spout to this day, such as...
It's not good for us to laugh. We have nothing to laugh at in this laughable society.
Well, then you got something to laugh at.
Exactly. It's a laughable society. I don't know.
Doesn't make any sense.
But you think about this, right? So now it's obviously a chicken and egg scenario. He now made the media event to tie the black metal scene to the crimes, which then causes Heat to show up and investigate everyone, which then also creates an impetus for everybody to make the fiction real. So what he did was sort of, in a way, he just did the thing, well, like, now we have to walk the walk, because if we don't, we look like a bunch of hypocrites, and I am actually the big, fat, dumbass loser that I sound like.
Right. Mm-hmm. Are they performing ever?
Yeah, they're performing.
They still are.
Varg doesn't do many live performances because it's a one-man band, so it's very tough for him to do a one-man Bursum show.
That's
but even
true.
Mayhem, only they didn't do very many performances at all with the original lineup. So these guys are playing shows. Like I think like Emperor and Dark Throne were playing like a ton of shows.
Okay.
But we'll get into what Varg is really all about, or at least what I think Varg is really all about.
Mm.
So after the interview, Varg gave the whole thing one more good kick in the ass, publicity-wise, and used a picture of one of the burned churches as the cover for the second Burzum release. And he called it Aske, which is Norwegian for ashes.
Oh.
And the EP hadn't been released yet, but Varg had been handing out flyers for it with his address clearly printed on the flyer.
Exactly. It's like if O.J. Simpson had taken pictures of his bloody hands after murdering the two of them and like put out a, like some kind of spoken word album called like look how big these hands are, wonder if gloves fit them.
Yeah,
you know,
if you could see my wounds, they're on the inside and on Nicole Brown and Ron Goldman.
Well, cops put two and two together, went to the address, and arrested Varg for arson. And he was put in prison from January to March of 1993. But he was set free as they couldn't actually prove he was doing anything more than just talking shit. And Varg knew that. Now, this whole thing, from interview to arrest, accomplished exactly what Varg wanted it to. It boosted him both as a figure and the scene and in the national Norwegian media, and it juiced the hell out of the whole black metal scene.
And if you get famous in the national Norwegian media, we're talking hundreds of people.
Do you have any idea how many, I think it's Rickles, what's the name of their money?
Rubles? Rubles? Runkles?
No, Rubles is Russians.
Riffles?
It's like, it's like Sklackles? It's like some weird name. But you'll have up to tens of those, whatever that is.
Squirrels?
And you'll have any fjorn you want that you pick up. I don't know what that is. I think it's a type of shirt. It's like a skirt that they wear. You could have any sort of tiersel, which is like, I think is some sort of sandal shoe. It's all of this. They're all combo clothes.
Cool. Kind of selling it there.
Now, things were reaching a fever pitch, and it was only a matter of time before something really big happened. And
we've already had church burnings and murder. That's not big enough for these guys?
No, we're talking really big.
Isn't that, that's okay, wow.
No.
And that something would not involve anyone on the outside, but rather it would happen from within with the murder of, how is it, Eystein Ursith?
Eystein of Arsith. Eystein Arsith.
I'm going to go with John Thompson. Can we just call him John Thompson from here on out?
Anyways, that's Euronymous' real name. It's spelled Eystein Arsith, but yeah. It's
Eystein Arthas.
Eystein Arkin. Eystein Arsith.
Woden.
Now, as we said last episode, Burzum, Varg's one-man band, had signed to Death Like Silence Productions, which was the record label that Euronymous owned and operated.
Mm.
Badly.
Can you imagine how sad it would be to just watch Varg, like, with the guitar on a stand, like we showed last night on the stream? It's a guitar on a stand, him trying to play guitar, running back to the boom, doing the drums, like, doing, like, wait a minute, going up and hitting, like, the beats machine, so it's being like, and then him screaming, or, like, doing that thing where you build the layers with the machine, where you play one layer and then click the next thing.
You build the layers. That is how he, I'd assume that's how he recorded all the Burzum albums. I don't think he ran from one
instrument. I like Henry's idea better, though.
Or an actual one-man band with this gigantic apparatus that he's playing everything all at once.
Oh, that'd be so fun to see.
This is how I get my steps in. Also, it doesn't that happen all the time in the street in the Europe with the one-man bands?
Seems
like it's an actual band to have, as if you have cymbals between your knees.
Yep. There's a Polish fella off the Bedford stop in Lorimer that he's got the toes tapping, he's got the knees going, he's got a guitar, he's got something going on with his head.
God, I love one-man bands.
He's a great guy.
I love him so much. One of my favorite compilations in the world is called Attack of the One Man Bands. If you can find it and you like rockabilly type of stuff, go check it out.
Wow.
Now, the recording of the first Burzum album was paid for by Count Grishnak's mother, who Euronymous was supposed to reimburse from album sales. And he never did, nor did he pay any royalties for that album or the Eska EP.
This poor mother.
If you think Varg is a pain in the ass, what is Mom Varg?
I think she's
gonna
just
be like
so desperately trying to forget that her son is a loser.
Well, from what Varg says, she supports him wholeheartedly in his racial opinions.
Oh, I see.
Yes, yes, and she's very—it's alternative. She's an alternative mother.
I see.
But Euronymous had more problems than just royalties. He was also in a bit of a tiff with a number of bands from the Swedish black metal scene after he mockingly called the bands Therion and Afflicted, quote-unquote, life metal in an interview.
Oh. Oh, snow, snow. Oh, this is on. Oh, my God. I got to see
them
fight.
It's like saying, it's like having a review that's like, it more like shit.
Yeah. Life metal. Ooh, that cuts deep.
He did, however, have very nice things to say about Marduk.
Oh. Oh, very nice.
Yeah, and Marduk is a fantastic band. Well, probably the best Swedish black metal band out there.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, there are differing opinions, but that is the prevailing opinion.
Oh. Right.
Furthermore, Varg's interview had brought so much negative press on the black metal scene that Helvete, Euronymous's record shop that was paid for by his parents, was shut down on the directive of said parents.
No, you can't shut down my record shop, Mom. That's where all my evil is. Mom! Oh, wait a second. I got all of these kebab stains on my belly button.
Aww.
I need to start wearing full shirts.
Oh, trust funds. They're funny. Those kids are a funny bunch.
Well, it's like all of the around me in Brooklyn is all like the one-stop shops where it's called like Victorious, and it's got three shirts hangers in there, and there's nothing else in there, and it's obviously just made by someone's parents' cash, and then it's closed in 2 months.
Yep, I walked into a store in Williamsburg recently, and they laughed me out of the building. Like, legitimately, we're just like, we don't have your size. What are you? Get out! And I just kind of left.
Just stitch the other clothes together. Stitch the clothes, put them together. I'm here to spend my money. And then you start being like, you start immediately turning like a senator, start screaming. That's what I do. When they start telling me they don't have clothes for me, and just being like, I'm here to spend my hard-earned cash. You mean to tell me?
Well, so Euronymous, he's fighting with the Swedes. He's got all the bands are screaming at him about royalties. His parents have made him close down his precious record store. He's losing control here.
He is fighting with all the neutral countries. The courage.
And they have a lot of energy to infight because they're not fighting wars.
That's true. That's a good point.
I also wonder, do you think that it's kind of like Tony Soprano, right? Where he's getting leaks in the ship.
Yeah, sure.
It's starting to like circle all around him. So now he's starting to do the thing where he's going to try and build another narrative where he is going to try, because that's what we're talking about. He's heavily talking shit about the other members of Mayhem. He's talking shit about everybody. He is now, I imagine, throwing out death threats back and forth. Now that someone is dead, because I'm just setting the scene, is that now this man is like alone on a sinking boat and he needs to get the Charles Manson control of the group again.
Yeah, he's like a little gossip columnist.
Well, I think it's a little, I don't know if it's that cynical with Euronymous. I think with Euronymous, he had been more of a leader on the actual music side. Because he was the guy that was releasing albums. He was running the record store to sell those albums. No matter how bad he was at it, he was still putting out the music.
So the murders and the church burnings, that's just a side dish.
Euronymous had nothing to do with that.
It was a distraction.
It was a distraction, but he was trying to use it.
Yeah.
Like, he was trying to use it, but he was just so stupid. He was just so stupid, and he can't run a business. He's a musician. He just shouldn't be in charge of the record store.
Yeah, right. And he was an amazing musician. Okay. Like, he was a fantastic musician. But, yeah, I mean, usually musicians do not make good businessmen.
Different skill sets.
Sometimes they do.
Unless
a lot
you're
of times
D. Snyder.
Don't.
But then you also have to be 100% sober.
Yeah.
That is by the way, do not watch the Twisted Sister documentary. It is so awful. If you get a chance,
you have to be completely sober to be a good musician and a businessman, and none of them are. It's like the three of us talking when we have our business talks.
Oh, yeah.
Where stuff we're like, you know, I mean, really the big thing is that we just got to chart up.
Yeah. I'm like, well, guys, no matter what's happening, I am tapping this keg. So let's do that. Businessmen. We sniff cards like we're kids in the hall.
Well, Euronymous, he liked to talk a big game about evil and such, but from what I can tell, the black metal scene for him was about just that, black metal. Mm. And even in interviews, when he talks about evil, it all just seems forced.
Yes. Uh-huh. I doubt that he's a poser. He just cares about the music.
Yeah.
He just wanted to make good albums. He liked the philosophy about it, but mostly he was, but again, that's why I'm saying, it's like he was seeing himself lose control over the people that, because that's how he would have control. So he'd hold court at the record store, and he would have all of these, like, he had all lines of communication running through him. He had his basement where, like, people from out of town would stay. So it was this great hub of the whole scene that he was in charge of. But in the end, it was just about music. But the problem is that he was up against essentially Varg, who was now taking it to a terrorist level where it was past the music.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Euronymous was all about the music, but that was not so for Varg Vikernes. For Count Grishnak, this shit was and still is very real and more about the ideas than it was about the music. And that doesn't discount Burzum as a band nor as an influence. No matter how big of a dickhead Varg is, those first two albums are landmarks. It's like we said with about Jerry Lee Lewis. Just because he married his underage cousin doesn't mean he's not important to the history of rock and roll.
There we go.
Everybody has their peccadillos. Everybody has their peccadillos.
Yeah, you remember Chuck Berry liked to...
I remember the old Chuck Berry. We did St. Louis. We performed at the at one of his famous bars.
Blueberry Hill. Yeah.
Blueberry Hill.
Yeah, just because Chuck Berry liked to film women peeing in his restaurant.
That was not good. That
does not mean that Chuck Berry is not one of the fathers of rock and roll music.
And also, great chicken in that restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a nice restaurant.
But I just don't, you could have paid him to pee on you.
Yeah, there's a series of mistakes that Chuck Berry made, and now he's gone. And we did make fun of him to the point where we possibly did, maybe we were complicit. in the 90-year-old's death, I don't know.
Yeah, we're not defending any of these guys. Of course, we're not defending any of their actions, but you can't deny that their music, their art, did have a huge effect on everything that came
out. Of course, look at Woody Allen or Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
To separate the artist from the art.
Yeah, sure.
I'm actually upset. I want to see that the movie Tom Cruise is in right now, but I can't look at him. Yeah, I can't do it.
You just can't look at Tom Cruise
anymore. It
aggravates
me.
Yeah.
Sucks.
Yeah. But it seems to me that for Varg, the ideas and principles come first, and the music comes second. And Euronymous and Varg, they fucking hated each other by the end. According to Varg, a lot of other people in the scene hated Euronymous as well, although, again, Varg is an unreliable source. This is what he said about that.
Dark Throne realized what a jerk he was. They didn't want anything to do with him. Fenris liked Austin. Is it Austin? Even I have a hard time with it. But the other guys, they hated him. They cursed him in rituals. They were Satanists. That's how they show how they hate. Me, I just wrote Euronymous sucks big ones in bathroom stalls. That was my grassroots.
That's brutal.
But I think a lot of it had to do with money. The reason why everybody else hated him is because he wasn't paying anybody.
Yeah,
He fucked up the whole business. He couldn't get reprints of Burzum. That's kind of what the big fight that happened to in Varg and Euronymous is that Burzum, the second album, sold out really fast, but Euronymous could not afford the second rollout of records. And Varg was already in with him for money, couldn't get his royalties paid out, so he's getting madder and madder. I think that Varg also, because he didn't get the stature that he wanted in the scene, because I honestly think in the end Euronymous genuinely didn't really care about his position. It happened naturally, and then he was trying to maintain it, where Varg was, he wanted what Euronymous had because he thought he was actually more hardcore, because we are gonna find out he was the real hardcore one. And when he didn't get it, he immediately, like in a way that happens with like easily bored pieces of shit, where he's just like, well, I'm done with this scene, like I'm out with this. And that's why in the end now his music's all Norse EDM.
Oh, it's not even it's not even that. It's, God, it's awful.
It's not Norse EDM?
We'll get into Burzum's recent stuff later.
All right.
Now, Faust said that Varg was, quote-unquote, very much into making war with Euronymous, that he didn't like him anymore because he wasn't true enough, and he wasn't paying royalties, which he wasn't.
That's the big issue.
Yeah, that's the big issue.
That is the big issue.
Yeah. Yes. But also, in the opinion of Faust, Varg didn't like Euronymous because Euronymous got more attention within the scene itself. Varg may have been the poster boy to the squares, but in the scene, Euronymous was still the guy.
Yeah.
Because no matter what, he was pissed off, like a lot of the musicians were pissed off at Euronymous, but the fans loved Euronymous still.
And they went to the record shop and everything,
they
right?
They went to the record shop.
He's like the hub.
Yeah, to them, like Euronymous was the guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like Euronymous is Kevin Hart and Varg is Hillary Clinton.
I don't quite see the connection, but we're going to let the audience figure that out and send your theories to us on Twitter at Ben Kissel, Henry Loves You, and Marcus Parks.
Off. Now, for Euronymous's part, it seems like he was a lot more worried about the Swedes than he was about Count Grishnak. But on the night of August 10th, 1993, Euronymous would find out who his true enemy really was.
Ooh.
Now, there are three versions of what happened that night.
It's like the movie Clue.
but here it's with an umlaut.
It's clear.
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 There's Varg's version, the version of the guy who was with Varg, and the official version. Varg's version begins with a call from Samoth of the band Emperor. Allegedly, Samoth told Varg that Euronymous had told him that he was planning to kill Varg by zapping him with a stun gun, tying him up, and torturing him to death.
No, you need to say it the proper Norwegian way, which is electronic shock pistol, which is what Varg calls it again and again.
Okay.
Now, Varg would have brushed this off as Euronymous just talking shit again, but Samoth was supposedly the only person Euronymous had said this to.
We'll get into this. I'll attack this whole theory, only because it's like they all issued death threats against everyone. That's just how they all spoke to each other.
That's very difficult. He's not Catwoman. I mean, how powerful is this taser?
This is the Sinister Six. Yeah. They're all acting like there's a bunch of supervillains all like meandering against each other, when it's just a bunch of bros.
Right.
21-year-olds in the basement of a stinky record shop.
Extremely intoxicated.
Well, Varg reasoned that if Euronymous wasn't being serious, he'd tell everybody, as he was known to do. But since Euronymous only told one person, it was more likely that he was serious about his threat. You see what I'm saying here?
He told one trustworthy black metal enthusiast. Uh-huh. In no way are they going to gossip.
They are
gossip
queens.
Lockbox. Al Gore, lockbox. Lock it in.
What a fucking nest of hens.
Well, that's the irony about all of this.
And that's what Varg said. He said, Euronymous, of course, he told Samoth, but of course Samoth reported directly to me, so I found out about it immediately.
Reported directly to him, huh?
Chelsea and Barbara in the office.
God, like, desperate house dweebs. This is unbelievable.
Desperate house dweebs.
Well, and not only had Euronymous told Samoth that he was going to kill Varg, Euronymous had also just sent Varg a very nice letter.
Oh.
Now, we don't know the exact contents, but Varg described it as, quote,
sweet, pink, and cozy.
And this naturally made him even more suspicious.
Ooh.
Would you believe every I had a heart above it? And every J, lowercase that is, like in Jörg, or in Jark, or in Kjörg, or in Jark. Everything begins with three J's. Mm-hmm. Each one had a heart over it.
Aww.
And I'm like, what are we doing, trying to seduce me? Then come over here and kiss me then, you sweet fucker, always holding out.
Oh, love could be in the air.
So on August 10th, 1993, Varg drove from Bergen to Oslo to, according to him, confront Euronymous about the threats, and he was joined by a guy named Snorri Ruch.
What was that?
Snorri Ruch. It's probably...
Snorri Ruch. He is the dwarf that keeps all the rest of them awake at night.
I see. I think he's dressed like a furry, right?
It's
he would have to be.
It's S-N-O-R-R-E, so it's probably like Snorri.
Snorri.
Snorri Ruch. But we'll call him by his alias. Blackthorn.
That's cool.
Now, you say that Varg drove. Varg was driven by Snorri. He called up Snorri. He said, drive me to Euronymous's house. And he has all of these little bitches that are like, yep. And they came. And Varg hid in the back seat with a blanket over him because he said that he was too famous in Norway and that if he's seen, he would cause a commotion.
Of course, I heard about that.
Well, actually, he does make a good point with that, because he was a national figure at this point because he had been arrested for all the church burnings and people were talking about him constantly.
So his mugshots were on the TV, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Everyone knew what he looked like. So Blackthorn had just joined Mayhem, or Snorri, excuse me, had just joined Mayhem, which was Euronymous's band. Now, his part in the story is pretty fuzzy, and although there is some evidence that says he may have known what was going to happen, it seems to me like he might have just been in the wrong place at the wrong time. He was just, as Henry said, he was just doing what Varg was telling him to do.
I see.
So Varg showed up at Euronymous's house in the middle of the night and rang the doorbell. Euronymous let him in, and Varg walked up to Euronymous's fourth floor apartment while Snorri stood outside having a smoke.
Now, Euronymous issued a death threat to you. He then allows you to just walk into his house. He answers the door in his whitey tighties, which are Norwegian, so you know that they're covered in urine stains.
Oh, sure. Well, what are you going to do? You got to let him in.
Now, the only two people who know what really happened once Varg got into the apartment are Varg and Euronymous. But according to Varg, Euronymous, still in his underwear, panicked when Varg confronted him and kicked Varg in the chest.
I'm kicking you. I'm going kicking and blast. It's like in Street Fighter.
So if there is like a tail of the tape, what are we talking here? Both 5'7", 115 pounds, reach about 25 inches.
I actually have no idea what their sizes are. I think Varg is actually a fairly tall guy.
Is he a taller guy?
It seems like he is.
I think he's a taller guy. They're both like gas station attendant fit.
My size.
You know what I mean? Where it's like, They could wrestle a homeless man, but only if the homeless man's too drunk to fight.
I see. All right.
Now, Varg said Euronymous ran to the kitchen to grab a knife, so Varg pulled his knife and stabbed Euronymous before he could get there.
Whew.
Euronymous then allegedly ran towards his room where Varg said he kept the shotgun the dead had killed himself with.
Doesn't know if that's real or not. He did not know if that was true or not, but what he said is that if it was true, he had to defend himself.
Mm-hmm. But Varg managed to chase Euronymous out of the apartment, who was screaming for help and ringing the doorbells of all his neighbors.
Which gave Varg complete contempt, because he died like a coward. Like a coward who goes screaming and running like a little girl. It's like, you're stabbing him.
Yeah, you are stabbing him. Yeah.
You're stabbing him. He's in his underwear. It's 3 a.m. He doesn't know what the fuck's going on.
He's wearing his cool I Heart Transylvania shirt.
Well, Varg said that since he was now absolutely convinced that Euronymous had been planning to kill him, Varg decided to end it right then and there.
Ooh.
And as Euronymous was running down the stairs, Varg stabbed him in the back again and again. Euronymous fell, and Varg delivered the killing blow by stabbing him in the skull hard enough to make the knife stick.
Whoa. Jeez, that is not easy to do.
That is not easy to do at all.
No, you have to be very mad at someone.
That is a fatality there.
Well,
my goodness.
But I don't know if he's telling the truth on that, because the coroner's report says that Euronymous was stabbed 23 times, and they list the official cause of death as blood loss. Varg is the only one who says that he stabbed Euronymous in the skull so hard the knife stuck. No one else says that.
Nothing Varg says is true. I am now convinced. I've listened to him tell the story 4 or 5 times. He does it again and again in his YouTube page. He did it in the documentary, and I think he is full of shit. I think that he panicked and was just stabbing him, and then he died at the bottom of those stairs while Snorri was just outside, just being like,
still smoking the world's longest cigarette, apparently. I don't know what
it was
a
500. It was Marlboro's 500.
Light it with a torch or something.
Now, it may have happened that way. It may have been self-defense, but there is a mountain of evidence to the contrary that says this was a premeditated act through and through.
Mm-hmm.
Now, according to the official court documents, there was a third accomplice in all of this. Just before Snorri and Varg left Bergen for Oslo, they set up an alibi. First, they rented a movie, one they had already seen, so they could describe the plot to police later.
And apparently it was Mrs. Doubtfire, because according to them, is that, if you rented it, how could you not stay at home and watch it?
I agree. He just wants his children back. And then, actually, it's a very creepy film.
Anachronism. Mrs. Doubtfire was not released yet.
1993.
Oh, anachronism.
No.
Wow. Wowza.
Wait, what year was Mrs. Doubtfire?
93.
I don't know about that.
It might not have been on video. God, it was 93.
Yes! Okay, it was on video.
I don't know if it was on video yet, because
it
took
6 months.
This whole thing happened in August, and I'm pretty sure Mrs. Doubtfire was a summer video.
Maybe
and it takes a long time for videos.
It was six months to the day.
Back then in the 90s, it took a long time for a video to be released in other countries as opposed to America.
I don't know.
Harvey Firestein, he was very fun.
We'll let the listeners figure this one out.
Can figure that out, but my
Marcus Parks at Henry loves you.
Wow.
I call anachronism.
Wow, I will decide the truth on that.
Well, after they rented the video, they left an ATM card with the third accomplice, who was supposed to take out some cash in the middle of the night to make it look like Varg was still in Bergen. Unfortunately, they left the wrong card. So that part of the plan fell apart.
So fucking stupid. Then Varg also brought with him a contract that would have released Burzum from Deathlike Silence Productions. Because that was his whole, his whole reasoning was saying, I went to Euronymous's apartment to hand deliver this contract to throw it in his face so that he could see that Burzum had left and Euronymous tried to murder me, which is garbage. They had been barely talking. It was already happening where it was like, Euronymous was trying to reel him back in because he wanted Burzum on the label because he loved Burzum. He loved the band and technically had a lot of weird love for Varg. But Varg just rejected him completely. Mm. And so he just thought he had built this solid thing when in reality it was fucking a Coen Brothers movie where everybody's a moron. Yeah. Like, he fucked it up completely.
Oh my goodness. He used his head like a butcher block. That is horrible stuff here. Well, if he did it.
Well, the whole,
like that.
The whole thing with the contract, Snorri said that if Varg dropped off the contract with Euronymous releasing Burzum, then everybody would think that everything was hunky-dory between them.
Uh-huh.
And that there would be no reason for Varg to kill Euronymous. Mm. And that, according to Snorri, that's exactly what Varg told Euronymous the visit was for through the intercom was when Varg was trying to get into Euronymous's building. Mm. Because Euronymous did not want to let Varg in.
Yeah, yeah. Shouldn't have let him in there.
Yeah, of course not. No, it's 3 a.m. Somebody has just driven 12 hours to come see you in the middle of the night. Why are you going to let him in the house? He's like, I just went to bed. Come back in the morning. And then Varg was insistent, and Euronymous let him in. And for some reason, when Snorri retells the story, he only refers to Varg as the Count.
Oh, God. All of these people reminds me of high school when we used to play D&D, and then we used to call each other by the names of our characters.
God, really?
Wait a second. Yeah. What?
Like,
public, in school?
Outside of the D&D game?
Yeah, my name was Ignatius Nostradamus because I was an elf wizard. I was a chaotic good elf wizard.
Wow. Wow. 7 years to get that piece of information out. Wow. That is... What was Ignatius? What was that name?
Ignatius Nostradamus?
Ignatius Nostradamus.
Yeah. It was cool. And I had control of fire. Mm,
so Stu! Is that Stu?
So you were a pyromancer as well.
Yes. Thank you, Marcus, for using the proper term.
Wow.
Hey, if he's going to be nerdy, he better be nerdy, right?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Get into it.
Well, Snorri said the Count had brought gloves with him as well, but he forgot to wear them.
Which is what Varg tried to use as a reason why it was not a premeditated murder. He's like, well, I had shooting gloves on me. I would have used my shooting gloves, which is the dumbest shit I've ever heard, that you even need to bring shooting gloves for your stuff, whatever. But obviously his story's filled with holes.
Yeah. And he says, like, my story has not changed for 21 years. That's why it's true. It's like, no, you just got a good story and you stuck with it.
Rolling with it, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think I may actually have some proof of why Euronymous let Varg into the room.
Why?
There's a bit of a piece that was written online that I found that I hear that, honestly, it tells the story, like, pretty accurately, and I think it's pretty close to what, like, actually went on between the two of them.
What's the name of the website that you read this on?
Well, here, I'll read the story.
Okay.
22-year-old Varg Vikernes waits outside of Euronymous's flat and knocks. Euronymous answers half naked, and his face is streaked with the sweaty remnants of face paint, expressionistic black and white geometric patterns, which once depicted him as a demonic and diabolical internal creature, but now only serves to characterize him as a lame kiss impersonator. Varg, it's been a while. Varg, staring at his feet as he nervously scuffs the floorboards. Hi, Euronymous, and yes, it's been like 9 months, not that I'm counting. Euronymous. Varg, we're friends. You can call me by my real name. Oystein. Varg, finally looking into Euronymous's eyes, very sheepishly. Okay. Hi, Oystein. Euronymous, what brings you to Oslo, my comrade in evil? Varg, oh, you know, church burning and shit. Euronymous, yeah, I forgot about how much of a hellraiser you are. Varg, embarrassed but flattered, doesn't realize he's blushing. As if... I'm nowhere near as evil as you. That suicide picture of your ex-vocalist, so fucking brutal. Varg, I couldn't stop thinking about you. Can I come in? Euronymous. Can it wait? It's very late. Yeah, I know. I was just wondering if we could talk about what happened last week. Euronymous. Last week? Yeah, oh, yes. I mean, I meant nothing. We were both drunk as fuck, dude. Varg.
Do you really believe that? Or are you just worried about Fenris? Of course not. Of course not. Fenris doesn't own me. Of course. I know that. I'm just worried. You haven't called me since, well, since it happened. It shouldn't have happened. It didn't mean anything. So it was all meaningless, you say. Those 3 hours of passionate lovemaking were meaningless, you say. You told me you love me. I do. It's just I don't want to be gay. But you are. Please don't be like this. I know you want to be with me. He grabbed Euro's face and kissed him hard. Euro didn't object and even led him to the bedroom. I'll be back. Now I just need to go to the bathroom. He walked out and Varg lay in his bed, stripped off, and waited for his lover. Varg's point of view. I lie flat on my back on the bed, my erection jutting out from my lower belly. I have an urgent need to touch myself, but I did not do it without master's permission. Still, one quick stroke can't hurt, right? With this thought on my mind, I'd reach down and encircle my throbbing member with my hand and jerking off slowly and gently. Bitch, did I tell you to masturbate? Master's voice booms from the doorway and I drop my hand. I ask you a question, slut! Did I ask you to masturbate? No, Master, but I was so horny. You're a whore. You're always horny. That doesn't give you the right to touch yourself without my permission. You will be punished now. Yes, Master, I whispered, afraid and yet aroused at the same time. Master retreats into the large cupboard in our bedroom and returns with a bag of fun gear, as he likes to call it. There's more pages of this.
What on earth did we just listen to? The Oscar goes to Henry Zebrowski. Powerful performance. Now, what is... There is sexual fiction about this stuff?
Of course there is.
Of course.
Of course there is.
Once upon a time in Norway.
What do you mean, of course there is?
Is what it's called. With Varg Vikernes by Livia Loves Black Metal.
Okay, one time in Norway.
What happened was is I went to go search for Varg Vikernes wrote a version, like a Norwegian version of the Turner Diaries, and I went to go look for it to like sort of like, and I that's the only thing that popped up when I looked up Varg Vikernes fiction.
I love it. Given his homophobic tendencies, I think it's a powerful way to combat this man.
So after the murder, Varg and Snorri drove all night back to Bergen, listening to Dead Can Dance so as to be as atmospheric and dramatic as possible.
Oh, God.
Whoa.
Yeah, and once they were back, they returned the video, completing their airtight alibi.
Oh, my. I hope they didn't spoil it for the clerk behind the desk, being like, it's Robin Williams the whole time.
No!
Yeah.
No!
Sorry.
Now, the suspicion for the murder initially fell on the Swedes that Euronymous had been feuding with at the time. And Varg fueled this theory, telling police the Swedes were jealous of Norwegian black metal ideology, which was decidedly more evil than the Swedish version.
Okay.
Yeah, of course it is. We just like clocks and chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after hitting a dead end with Varg, police started grilling some of the black metal hangers-on, specifically a 16-year-old Swedish girl who had briefly lived with Euronymous. She said,
I do not believe that Esten was killed by Swedish Satanists. Most of these Swedes are too cowardly to ever commit a murder. I will not reveal the name of the real killer. The black metal scene will exact its own revenge against him. Sorry.
Yeah, that's a good point. You don't associate Swedes with murder.
Not a
you
whole lot.
You don't do it. No,
yeah.
Very
no, not a whole lot. The Norwegians. They
I
have a lot
that.
More. Yeah, well, yeah.
Well,
you got your Anders. You got your Anders Breivik.
Oh my goodness! Yes, yes. Oh, horrible man.
Oh.
87
oh, this guy. Oh. Oh. What about Anders?
Oh. What about Barb?
Well, everybody hates Anders.
Yes, they do.
But while this girl wouldn't roll over on Varg, I suppose thinking about taking revenge herself, she did finger Baird Eithun, a.k.a. Faust, for the murder of Magna Andresen. Faust was arrested a year and a week after the murder and confessed under questioning.
But there was still no evidence other than this young girl and his confession, right?
Yeah, there was no evidence, but his lawyer advised him to confess.
Never confess. You got to watch the documentary on Netflix. Have you guys seen the confession tapes yet?
Uh-uh.
Very interesting.
It is very good. It's very, very good. I would like to do an episode about false confessions. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, oh, for sure. We definitely should.
Now, after Faust went down, the rest of them fell like dominoes, including Varg, who had stupidly left fingerprints all over the crime scene.
He didn't wear his shooting gloves.
Well, you know why he left fingerprints all over the scene? was because once he heard that squirting sound, his master applied lube to his 10-inch-long, 4-inch-thick cock. He also applied a little to my silky, smooth-shaven crack and pressed one finger inside of me, wriggling it around to loosen me up. I moaned into my gag as master chuckled. "You like being fingered, don't you, slut?" he hissed.
Oh my.
Unable to respond verbally, I simply gave another muffled moan.
And if you are listening and you are aroused by that, it's okay. You can find it online.
He pressed the huge head of his uncut cock against my hole. Master never was one for being gentle.
I can't hear any more of this.
Master gripped my narrow hips as he slammed his heavy meat in and out of my asshole.
We've got a sex alert going on over here. It's turning into saucy talk.
No wonder he had no time to clean up the scene.
My good, I guess I get it now, yeah.
Now, there's a lot of speculation as to why Varg murdered Euronymous. We know Varg says that it was self-defense. Others claim that it was solely over royalties, but that doesn't really make sense either. Because if Varg kills Euronymous, he's not going to get any of the royalties.
Maybe there was money in the house. Did they try to rob the place?
No, not at all.
Okay.
No.
Of course there's not money in the house.
I don't know.
He spent all his money on kebabs and soda.
I'm speculating.
That's the thing. It's like, in the rap world, right, when we originally were doing the series, we talked about the idea of like East Coast versus West Coast. At least those guys had fucking money.
Yes.
Yeah.
They were all millionaires fighting each other with armies. They had boys. They had like all a crew and guns and all this shit. These are just shitheads.
No money in
that. Like essentially are just outside of living in a dumpster.
Mm-hmm. Maybe some Eggos in the freezer.
Now, the other theory is that Varg killed Euronymous for dominance over the scene to take his place at the top of the pecking order. Now, personally, I think that last theory is closest, but I think there's a little more to it than that, or a little less, depending on your point of view. Now, this is just speculation. This is my personal opinion, but I think after spending quite a bit of time with the words of Varg Vikernes over the last few weeks, that the most important thing in the world to Varg is how he sees himself.
Right.
That's why he killed Euronymous, for his own ego. Mm. He needed to feel powerful. He didn't give a shit about being a leader or gaining dominance over a music scene that he didn't really seem to give a shit about. Even though they're all terrible, Varg is still a man of ideas, and he couldn't stand that a man who, in his opinion, was a poser could even have the possibility of being taken more seriously than him.
Which just shows how much of a loser he is.
Yes.
He's just such a loser. This idea that he needs to live up to what everybody else thinks of him. It's also, there's a part of this concept of like, that's how far you gotta go in the black metal world, where it's like, no, actually, the farthest you gotta go is get a platinum record.
Yeah, that
so
would
what
be.
What that means is that would be
nice.
Really impressive.
But yeah. In Varg's mind, he is living his truth the best, to his best ability, right? Like, he thinks he's actually walking the walk. He's talking the talk, and now he's walking the walk.
So you're saying hashtag Yas Queen.
He is Yas Queening. I mean, it leads to horrible results and murder, but he did follow through with what he was saying. So I think in his mind, he's telling the truth, or he's living a truthful life.
Above all, Varg is a man of principle.
Yeah,
that is what pale way.
Yeah, he has his principles, he has his ideas, and he sticks to him, and he has stuck to him for his entire fucking life. He has not wavered once in his beliefs.
All right.
So for the murder of Magna Andresen, Faust was sentenced to 14 years in prison.
And that's it?
That's it. Well, that's the Norwegian justice system.
I don't know
about
that.
And when he was later asked if he regretted it, he said,
"There's no remorse. I took his life and I paid for it. It's not a big deal, at least not in my opinion."
Yeah, because you didn't really pay 14 years. I mean, that's a steal at any murder.
Well, Snorri.
that's a low price for a murder.
Snorri Ruch, a.k.a. Blackthorn, was sentenced to 8 years for his part in the murder of Euronymous. And for the murder itself, Varg Vikernes, a.k.a. Count Grishnak, got the maximum sentence in Norway of 21 years in prison.
Wow. And that's also, we mentioned Breivik, Ange Breivik, who killed 87 people. 21 years is all he got as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really do think Norway is a very principled country.
Yeah, yes. For better or for worse. I would say when you kill 87 people, 21 is too light. And in this case, we probably have some murderers in this country getting 20, 15 years as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's one of those things where it's, there's over-sentencing and then there's under-sentencing. sentence.
Yeah, for sure.
O.J. Simpson's about to have a reality television show.
In October, he is out in October, a perfect month for O.J. to be released. Well, Halloween.
Well, according to the blind items, O.J. is working on a book which is going to tear the Kardashian family apart.
Somebody is Kim's real dad. Is it Kim or is it the which one?
No. I believe it's
it Khloé?
It's the one that looks exactly like O.J. Simpson.
Ooh. Is it Khloé?
I think it's Khloé.
I think
it's Khloé. But for more blind items and celebrity news, listen to page 7 on The Last Podcast Network. So where is Varg today?
Where is Varg? You know what, Marcus? Can I ask? Where is Varg today?
Let me tell you.
Thank you.
Well, it's been 24 years since his conviction, so he's now out of jail and has his very own YouTube channel.
He's a regular PewDiePie.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
Racist, in other words.
This is a controversial opinion, but I think technically he is more entertaining than PewDiePie.
Okay, yeah, well, that's not that controversial. I could see that by far more.
But this man can drone for hours.
Yep, his videos cover everything from the purpose of blonde hair and Thulean myths to other videos with titles like "How big muscles can a man get?"
Muscles can a man get?
Well, his whole thing is that bodybuilding is a selfish act, and that men should only be strong enough to work in the woods, and that if you have too big of muscles, it eats up too much energy, so it's bad for survival.
This is not true.
Which then again just sounds like he just wanted to look at muscles.
He also what did he do in prison for 21 years?
Well, he said he read. He was a scholar. It was essentially a time of scholarship in which I read and I wrote. And that video, "How big muscles can a man get?" It's mostly just a slideshow of old-timey Scandinavian beefcakes, which Varg seems to have quite a large collection of.
Interesting.
It's like 20 beefcakes.
Okay.
And it's all from a very specific period of time.
Fascinating.
Now, he posts videos almost every day, sometimes multiple times a day, mostly from the front seat of his car, as most YouTube videos are made for some fucking reason. You can see him playing with swords.
Oh.
You can see him doomsday prepping or replacing the air filter on his Volkswagen bus.
And who doesn't want to see that?
Marcus, what's the name of his role-playing game?
Oh, God, I can't remember. He created...
Look it up real quick. Look it up real quick, because he did a role-playing game that is all grinding. He did this D&D nerd thing where he made it so it's all of the least fun parts of the role-playing game, and he made it ultra realistic, where if you need wool, you have to raise sheep, and then you have to roll dice to see if your sheep live, and then you have to, like, and so you do it for hours and hours and hours, and eventually you get to the part where you play out the Norse myths.
I'm interested to hear what an Ignatius Nostradamus, like how a character like that might participate in a role-playing game like this.
Okay, cool. So I got my talisman of protection. Good. I've got my talisman of Victoria is going to let me ask her to the dance this week. I think she's going to. Victoria's the name of a real girl I had a crush on in elementary school.
The role-playing game is called My Farag.
Okay.
Which is just that he didn't even give it a fun name. My Farag just stands for Mythic Fantasy Role-Playing Game.
He's very literal.
He says, the rules are designed to make sense and to give the players the ability to immerse themselves in Thule, a highly credible fantasy world similar to the European classical antiquity, some places touching into the Viking Age or the Bronze Age, but yet different.
Huh.
In Thule, sorcery and ancient deities are real, and the world is inhabited by not only humans, but also elves, nymphs, dwarves, ettins, and trolls, as well as other creatures.
Honestly, sounds kind of fun.
It is a 161-page core rule book.
Oh, my. You have to read 160 pages of rules? What kind of world is this?
It is a pain in
no
the
kidding.
Ass. I was just looking at it. I was like, there's just so much bullshit in this.
And for nothing. All right.
Yeah, well, not for nothing. For fun.
Yeah, but who can you talk to about it other than the people that have read 160 pages of rules?
Yeah, that's pretty. I mean, a lot of role-playing game books are they get about that thick.
It's lonely.
They get pretty thick. No, it's not lonely. You play it with friends.
But
it's the opposite of lonely.
Okay.
No, it's actually It has a pretty big YouTube group.
Oh,
like a
okay.
Community.
So there is a
There's
community
like 60
there.
To 70 people that get together and they play the games and they record it over YouTube and they hang out. And that's and also Varg, if you do get into the game, Varg is a direct person you can talk to. And they'll talk on he'll talk at you on YouTube and he'll get into the talking about variances of the game because he's constantly pushing his game.
Strange yeah. stuff.
Now we would play some excerpts from Varg's videos, but they are extremely boring. Much like Burzum's new albums, which are pretty much just new age music for goths that borders on self-parody.
Ah.
Now, as far as crime and the black metal scene goes, it definitely did not end with the conviction of Varg Vikernes. It would take a whole other episode for us to cover even a fraction of these other crimes, but we definitely wanted to give an honorable mention to a man named Gal.
Yeah. Oh.
Now, Gal, lead singer of the black metal band Gorgoroth,
which is
arrested. Yeah, which is fucking great. It's one of those Lord of the Rings references.
Yes.
But fucking awesome. He was arrested in 2004 for assaulting a dude who showed up drunk and belligerent to a party at Gal's house. Now, allegedly, Gal tied him up, tortured him for hours, and collected his blood in a cup to minimize the mess.
My goodness.
Now, in his own defense, Gal said,
"As I always say, when people cross my line and I let them know where my line is, many steps before they cross it, and they still choose to cross it, then I will be the one to decide what their punishment will be. And it is every single time we are playing Hungry Hungry Hippos. And
oh my
I
goodness,
lose,
those hippos
you.
Are hungry. Well, he tells the guys not to cross the line. The guy crossed the line. He knew where the line was.
Yeah, he knew exactly where the line
this guy would be a strong president.
Oh yeah, Gaul is known to be like the scary one in the black metal
scene.
He
made a red line and someone crossed it.
He looks fucking terrifying.
I believe it.
Big dude, long hair, like his corpse paint is fucking on point.
He's terrifying.
He's got awesome nail-covered armbands, and he's also a fucking great artist.
Okay.
Like, Gal is he's a very interesting character. He also allegedly beat a guy half to death backstage at a concert for making homophobic remarks, as Gal is one of the few openly gay dudes in the black metal scene.
Principled.
But Gal claims that nobody said anything to him directly.
He heard it.
I will suck dick so evilly, I will suck the devil's dick and make the devil come, because there's nothing more fucking metal than sucking the devil's dick so well that he comes in under 3 minutes, and I'll do it. Time me.
2.5 minutes. Wow, 2.5 minutes. Under 3 minutes.
I will say I wish the devil had warned me before he ejaculated. It's simply polite to do.
And that's the day the devil died.
Now, in other news, not 2 weeks ago, right here in America, the Polish death metal band Decapitated were arrested on suspicion of kidnapping a fan, although very few details have been released about that one just yet.
I'm not trying to get into all that Polish death metal.
Yeah. No.
That's intense stuff.
I was also trying to look up famous Polish warriors, because Norway has all these famous warriors. And I believe there's one called the Hathars, and they just wear big hats.
Aww.
And it's bad. It's bad.
Well, you're a Polish man, so I'd imagine you wanted to look into your
my heritage,
ancestry a bit.
My family.
Yep.
What'd you find?
Not a lot.
And while it may not be a crime, the band Stalag have used actual criminals in their recordings. One of their members works part-time in a mental institution and was able to convince the administration to let him borrow patients to sing on one of their albums under the guise of Primal Scream Therapy.
Very interested.
It's just nice with Stalag is that they actually got the patients' permission to use their screaming, because it was like they were already screaming.
Yeah, why not use it?
Which is nice.
Yeah, put a microphone in there.
Yeah, one of the seven vocalists they used had been institutionalized from the age of 16 for murdering his mother by stabbing her over 30 times.
Not good.
And another patient almost killed another patient during the recordings, which is supposedly captured on the album.
Jesus. Oh, my goodness.
It didn't happen, though.
Thank God it didn't happen.
Now, here is a sample of Stalag's album, Project Misanthropia, recorded in an abandoned chapel.
You can really snap your fingers to it.
I don't know how to dance to it.
Do you hear it?
The people screaming?
Do you hear
it? It sounds like hell. Yeah.
You should listen to the whole thing. It's like 35 minutes long.
That? I 35 minutes of that?
Yeah, it's an album.
Yeah, dude.
I mean,
that's a short album, too.
I feel like it's like when you go into the into water that's room temperature, at some point you don't even realize that you're in water, because that's already what my brain sounds like. That's fine.
And that's it.
Wow, there it is. Norwegian black metal.
That's it.
One, two, and three
one,
parts.
One, two, and three. And
good
as
job.
a nice woo. Epilogue, Finriz from Darkthrone that we've mentioned a few times. You know what he does today?
What?
Mailman.
There it is.
And he loves it.
I love Mailman.
He still does music, of course, but yeah, he just got a day job as a mailman because he just loves delivering the mail.
There it
Finriz,
is.
You know, despite the bad shit that he did in his past, he got over it, and he's an all-around pretty good dude. He's known as, like, the cool dude in the black metal.
Yeah, he's got a sense of humor. It's kind of nice. I'm really excited that we covered so much that we got to cover. And I'm glad that the black metal scene still got it.
There it is.
Yeah, this says still Wittain's still out there throwing goat's blood on everyone, making people puke.
Yep. The good stuff. They're doing all good things.
The good stuff, man. Mayhem's still out there doing their shit.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, and
it's
apparently
kinda
like
cool.
their new vocalist is like pretty fucking great. He toured with Sun and did a lot of really cool shit. So yeah, the black metal scene still going strong to this day.
There it is. All right, everyone. Let's see. We are in Toronto. We're in Pittsburgh.
We're in Toronto this Friday. We're in Toronto this Friday, September 22nd. There are tickets available for that. You can go to our website, lastpodcastontheleft.com, to get tickets for that. Or of course, we're coming to LA soon. We're going to be coming to Omaha, Nebraska.
That's it.
On November 18th, and we've got one other show this year that we're going to be announcing real soon, but it's a place that people have been asking us to come back to for a long time.
That's
so we're going to be announcing that
very
soon.
Excited about that.
Two things. For the LA show, we're going to have a costume contest. So yeah. Make sure you guys show up full gear. We're doing this shit. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah. It's Halloween. Let's fucking bust it out if you want to wear a costume. And second of all,
if you want to. You don't have to, though.
Yeah, but I like having, I always like an excuse to wear a costume.
I know you do.
And then September 29th, Friday at 11 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater in New York City. I will be in town. We're doing a Murderfish show. I guess it's going to be the last one. I don't know when if we'll ever do it ever again. So if you want to come out to see a Murderfish show, come and hang out, and you're in the New York City area, September 29th, 11 p.m.
There it is, September 29th, the People's Improv Theater, great place. Keep on supporting all the shows here on the Last Podcast Network. Abelian's top hat for everything political, page 7, that was as referenced in the show. Mm-hmm. Sex and Other Human Activities, Movie Signs with the Mads, Wizard and the Bruiser, all the great shows here. Make sure to go check them out and rate and review them on iTunes, and let's get all these shows to number one, because you guys deserve to be only listening to the best, and you have been for years, so thank you so much.
Yes. And I also want to thank Hungry Ghost Press for sending a big box of merch. Their shit is amazing. They sent a bunch of posters, a lot of t-shirts, like some of them like that. I love your t-shirt so much. I fucking love Hungry Ghost Press, so thank you very much. And also want to thank Laughing Lion Dry Bags for sending us a bunch of dry bags.
They're just bags
what
that are
dry.
They're bags that you can put stuff in, and it keeps them dry.
I love it.
I do not know why they... it's for kayaking and...
We're an outdoors crowd.
That's nice.
We are water people.
I love being out there.
Get us to do outdoor activities.
I'm going
to
start doing it. I would love to see me fit in a kayak. Good Lord.
Follow us on Twitter at Henry Loves You, at Marcus Parks, at Ben Kissel. Follow us on Instagram at Dr. Ventasty, at Marcus Parks, at Ben Kissel, the number one.
There it is.
And follow us on all of the bullshits at LP on the left.
There you go. Hail yourselves, everyone.
Hail Satan.
Hail Gein.
Hail me.
And let's do a Magustalations.
Magustalations.
Hey, guys, don't kill somebody. Just make an album.
Make music.
You know what I mean? Just make albums.
Make an album. Make 6 albums.
There it is.